Don't move. Maybe he won't see us.
The three men lay utterly still and silent as Wick approached. As Wick came closer, it grew apparent that he was going to miss them. He was about 20 feet to their left as he walked to the edge of the bluff and looked down at the camp. The preacher glanced in that direction too, and he saw that Kobe had walked over to stand in front of Esteban and Juanita. The preacher wasn't sure what was going on, but as he watched, Wick began to wave an arm above his head.
Hey, Kobe! Hey, Arnie! Look at me! I'm gonna jump off this cliff and see if I can fly!
The bluff was about 30 feet tall. Such a fall might not kill him, but he would probably wind up with a busted leg or arm at best. If he landed wrong, the drop might even prove fatal. Preacher really didn't care what happened to Wick. He still remembered the way the giant had wanted to molest Lupito Ojeda back at the trading post. But he didn't much like the idea of watching the behemoth throwing himself off the bluff, simply because he was too dim-witted to know what he was doing. But he and Audie and Nighthawk couldn't try to stop Wick. That would mean revealing their presence and giving up any element of surprise. Wick spread his arms like they were wings and perched on the edge of the bluff.
Damn it, Wick, stop! Don't jump!
Kobe! I seen an eagle earlier. It looked so nice. The way he's flying around. I done tried flapping my arms, but I can't get off the ground. I figured I ought to jump off some high place and get in the air first and then flap my arms.
Shit, it don't work like that, Wick. Just stay there. I'll come up and get you.
Damnation. We'd best fade away before Kobe gets up here. Come on, dog.
Staying on their bellies, the three men crawled backward until they were well away from the edge of the bluff. They could hear Kobe as he made his way into the woods and circled around toward the spot where Wick waited for him. When Preacher and his companions got to their feet, they slipped back in the other direction, working away from Kobe and Wick. Preacher had to hold on to Dog's ruff and practically drag the big cur along with him. No growls came from Dog's throat now. Preacher could tell how eager he was to get at Kobe and rip him to pieces. Dog always had been a good judge of character. They had taken a circuitous route, but they were back at the spot where they had left their horses.
What are we going to do now?
Well, there's not enough cover around that camp to let us slip in and get close enough to grab Esteban and Juanita. I reckon we'd best just bide our time and wait for a better chance. Truth be told, waiting gnaws the hell out of my innards, but I don't see as how we got a choice.
Perhaps tomorrow will bring a better opportunity.
It better. Dog here is itching to tear into them sons of bitches, and I know just how he feels.
By the time Kobe had talked Wick into giving up the idea of flying and brought him back down to the camp, Juanita had stretched out on the ground with Esteban lying next to her. Both pretended to be sound asleep. Kobe had looked at him for a moment, then turned away with an irritated shrug. The ruse had worked. But the fact was, Juanita got very little sleep that night, and morning came much too early.
Hey, time to get up, Senorita.
Juanita's muscles were almost too stiff and sore to let her move. Esteban sat up without quite as much trouble, but he still looked tired, too. He managed to stand up. He turned to Bert.
Could you help my sister to her feet, please?
Sure. I never mind helping a pretty lady.
Bert bent to take hold of Juanita's arms. As he did so, Esteban reached out quickly with his bound hands and plucked the pistol from behind Bert's belt. Stepping back quickly, he raised the gun and cocked the hammer.
Esteban, no!
Hey, be careful with that pistol, kid. The trigger's mighty touchy.
Then you are the one who should be careful, senor. I have nothing to lose.
What about your sister?
I would rather she die quickly than suffer at the hands of you and your friends.
Listen, kid, I ain't done nothing to you or her. The fact is, I've been trying to look out for the two of you.
Shit, the kid's got a gun!
That got the attention of everyone else. Kobe came running out of the trees where he had gone to empty his bladder. He had his rifle with him, and he pointed it at Esteban as he slid to a stop.
Drop the pistol or I'll blow your brains out.
Not before I pull the trigger and kill your man.
Better listen to him, Kobe. I think he's nuts enough to do it.
Yeah? In that case, I'll give you to the count of three of ours. than I'm putting a ball through your sister's head.
Esteban!
One.
Give it up, kid. There's no way you can win this one.
Two.
Esteban swallowed hard. His eyes flicked toward Juanita, took in her drawn, pale features. Esteban lowered the pistol. With the barrel pointing at the ground, he eased the hammer off the cock. Bert reached out with a hand that shook just slightly and took the gun out of Esteban's grip. Kobe stepped forward, reversing the rifle in his hand. Kobe loomed over Esteban's fallen figure and turned the rifle again so that the barrel pointed at Esteban's head.
You worthless little greaser bastard. I think I'll go ahead and kill you right now.
Preacher Audie and Nighthawk had made camp about a quarter mile from where Kobe and his bunch had stopped for the night. Early the next morning, while Audie and Nighthawk were still asleep, Preacher stalked off, heading back toward the bluff where they had spied on the camp the previous night. Preacher was about 100 yards away from the edge of the bluff, about to belly down and crawl the rest of the way, as he and his newfound friends had done the night before. The terrified sound shot through Preacher's brain, and in that instant, he knew what he had been doing wrong for days now. He had been thinking too goddamn much.
God damn it! I've tried to outguess, outfigure, and outtrick those bastards, and all it's done is get those two youngins captured. There's a time for thought, and by God, there's a time for action.
Preacher lunged forward, gliding through the brush like a great gray wolf. His long legs covered the ground in a hurry, and as he reached the edge of the bluff, he looked down and saw that Esteban was on the ground, with Kobe standing over him, pointing a rifle at his head. Preacher snapped his own rifle to his shoulder and drew a bead in less than the blink of an eye.
Kobe, look out!
Kobe had twisted instinctively in response to Arnie's shout, turning so that the rifle ball on its downward trajectory barely clipped the top of his left shoulder. The impact was still enough to knock him to his knees and make him drop his rifle.
It's Preacher! Kill him!
Preacher dropped the empty rifle, yanked both pistols from behind his belt, and cocked them as he stepped off the edge and started sliding down the slope. The drop-off wasn't sheer right here, but it was steep enough so the Preacher could barely stand upright as he slid down on his heel. He saw Chambers, Stilson, and Wick off to his right, so he swung his right-hand pistol toward them. One of the balls flew past Chambers' head, as the other ball simultaneously smashed Stilson's left thigh bone. Preacher hit the bottom and used his momentum to send him racing forward toward Esteban and Juanita. Bert McDermott wheeled toward him and brought up a pistol. The shot missed, and Preacher threw his empty pistol, sending it spinning through the air to slam into Bert's face. Kobe was still down too, but Arnie was on his feet with a pistol in each hand. Preacher felt the ball pluck at his shirt. Arnie rushed the second shot, and it missed Preacher's head by a good 3 inches. Preacher kicked Kobe in the back as he went by. Esteban seemed to be unconscious. Juanita had crawled over to her brother and thrown herself half on top of him in an obvious effort to protect him. Preacher reached their side and dropped to a knee beside her, lining his left-hand gun on Arnie as he did so.
Hold it!
Three of Preacher's enemies were down. Arnie was momentarily unarmed, and Chambers looked confused, unsure of what to do. Wick's crushing weight drove all the breath out of Preacher's lungs and made skyrockets explode through his brain. The pistol was knocked out of Preacher's hand, and he couldn't reach his knife because he was pinned down so effectively by the giant. All he could get free was his right arm. It shot up, and he clamped his right hand on Wick's throat. Wick's face began to turn dark red. Wick suddenly jerked and stiffened, and Preacher heaved to the side as hard as he could. Preacher rolled and saw an arrow protruding from Wick's back. The feathers and the markings on the shaft identified it as a crow arrow. Nighthawk had shown up. A shot from the bluff drove Arnie back, even though it didn't hit him. A few feet away, Preacher saw Kobe crawling toward the rifle he had dropped earlier when Preacher's shot grazed him. Preacher dove for his own pistol. He rolled and snatched it off the ground, shooting upright. He twisted toward Kobe, expecting to trade shots. But to his surprise, he saw Kobe surge onto his feet and run toward the river. Kobe and Arnie were fleeing from the barrage of arrows and rifle fire laid down from the top of the bluff by Nighthawk and Audie. Chambers and Burt McDermott had hold of the wounded Stilson, one on either side of him, and they were hustling away from there as fast as they could. Wick still lay face down, the arrows sticking up from his back. The thieves reached their tethered horses and ducked behind the nervous animals, using them for cover. Kobe and Arnie jerked the reins of their mounts loose from the trees where they were tied and sprang into the saddle, ducking as lead sang around their heads. McDermott and Chambers hoisted Stilson onto another of the horses and pressed the reins into his hands, then lunged for their own mounts. A rifle ball clipped Bert's arm, but he managed to make it into the saddle. He kicked his horse into a run, following Kobe and Arnie. Chambers and Stilson did likewise, quickly drawing out a firing range. Dog chased them for a short distance before turning around and trotting back to Preacher. The Preacher knelt beside Esteban and Juanita. The young woman was conscious and seemed to be all right. Preacher helped her up and then rolled the Esteban onto his back. Pressing a couple of fingers into the young man's neck, Preacher found a strong pulse.
I reckon he'll make it. Looks like he took a hard wallop.
See, and he would be dead now if not for you, Senor Preacher. Gracias, Senor. Mil gracias.
Preacher looked over Juanita's shoulder to see Audie and Nighthawk riding along the riverbank toward him. Nighthawk was leading the horse. The two trappers had circled around to a point where they could descend the bluff with the horses. Preacher glanced in the other direction, where Kobe, Arnie, and the others had disappeared around the bend in the Purgatoire, back the way they had come from the day before. Although they had been forced to flee by the deadly accurate rifle and arrow fire from Audie and Nighthawk, Preacher didn't believe for a second that the hard cases had given up. Kobe wouldn't abandon his goal of getting his hands on that treasure. Now, he would be even hungrier for vengeance on Preacher and the Alvarez siblings. Not to mention Preacher's newfound allies. Esteban stirred.
Preacher, where did you come from?
He came down that bluff like an angel descending from heaven.
First time I recollect anybody comparing me to an angel. Here, come here.
Preacher helped Esteban to his feet.
I've been following Kobe's bunch with this here couple of fellas I ran into yesterday. Out there is Audie. And that one's Nighthawk.
I'm pleased and honored to meet you, Senorita. Preacher, we'd better light a shuck out of here while we still can.
We don't have enough horses.
I reckon Nighthawk's pony can carry double, especially if you ride with him since you're lighter. Horse is plenty strong enough to carry me and Esteban for a ways.
Where are we going?
The Padre and the Yaquis and them wagons are still up ahead somewheres. They'll be bound for the old mission. I reckon we ought to head for there, too.
You do not intend to try to take back the treasure from Father Hortensio, do you? I am angry with him for what he did, but still, the gold and the relics belong to the church.
Well, the church is welcome to him. What I was thinking was that Mission Santo Domingo might make a pretty good place to ford up when Kobe and his bunch come after us. But we got to get there first.
Without any more delay, we mounted up. Preacher and Esteban on horse, Juanita climbing on the Nighthawk spotted pony in front of the Stoic Crow. The rider set off at a ground-eating lope, not pushing the mounts too hard since two of them were carrying double, and not wasting any time neither. They left behind the fire, which was now dying out in a circle of stones, and they also left behind the arrow-pierced body of Wick Jimson. Wick stirred. The giant tried to push himself up on his hands and knees, only to fail and sprawl out again. He lay there for a while, gathering his strength. Wick climbed unsteadily all the way to his feet. His broad face contorted in a grimace at the pain in his back. He reached behind him and found the arrow. A few inches of the shaft remained attached to the arrowhead, sticking out through the blood-stained hole in the back of Wick's shirt. He looked at the arrow, wondering where it had come from, and then he threw it aside, not really caring. All that mattered was that when he looked around, He didn't see the Señorita anywhere. He saw tracks, though. Hoof prints led off to the east.
Señorita must have gone that way.
Wick shuffled off in that direction and then broke into a shambling run. He didn't know where Juanita had gone, but he was going to find her. He didn't care if he had to run all day and all night and all the next day. One way or another, he was going to find the Señorita. Chambers had never seen Kobe so angry. The man looked like he was going to explode with rage.
I'll skin him alive. He's got more lives than a damn cat. But we'll see how long he makes it once I start peeling the hide off of him. One strip at a goddamn time.
Arnie was kneeling beside Chuck Stilson. He had been working on Stilson's wounded leg ever since they had stopped. Stilson had lost consciousness and toppled out of the saddle, possibly hurting himself even worse. Arnie had used a tourniquet to get the bleeding stopped and cleaned away enough of the crimson gore to see what he was dealing with. He stretched Stilson's leg out and heard the ends of the shattered bone grating against each other.
We need to get this leg splinted.
Now perhaps I can help. What do you need me to do?
See if you can find a couple of fairly straight pieces of tree limb about twice as big around as your thumb and maybe 2 feet long, Professor. I can use them as splints if you can find something like that.
I'll see what I can do.
What about me? I'm hit, too. This shoulder hurts like blazes. Damn it, my arm ain't completely healed up from where Preacher shot me before, and now the bastard shot me again.
Well, I'll look at you when I get a chance, Kobe. Bert got nicked, too, you know.
Bert McDermott stood to one side, calmly tying a strip of cloth around his bullet-burned upper arm, using his teeth to hold the makeshift bandage as he knotted it tight.
Don't worry about me, Arnie. I'll be all right.
Everything's shot to hell. It's all falling apart around me.
Chambers came up carrying a couple of pine branches.
Will these do?
Yeah, they look fine, Professor. Good job.
Ross ripped up a homespun shirt from his own Possibles bag and used it as bandages, tying them as tightly as possible around the holes in Stilson's leg where the pistol ball had gone in and out. When he loosened the tourniquet, the bandages reddened a little from fresh blood, but not too much. Arnie thought there was a good chance Stilson wouldn't bleed to death anyway. Carefully, he laid the branches on either side of the wounded leg and tied them in place with rawhide thongs. He thought the bone was back together as best he could get it, although it was possible the ball had pulverized enough of the bone so that it would never heal properly.
Well, this leg might wind up shorter than the other, and you might have a bad limb from now on. Better to be crippled for life, though, than dead.
Am I imagining things, or have you had some medical training, Mr. Ross?
When I was younger, I thought I might be a sawbones. I apprenticed to one for a while. Never worked out, though.
A pity. You have some definite skills in that area.
Is Stilson ready to ride yet?
He ain't gonna be doing any riding for a while, Kobe. Not for a day or two, at least. If he does, it'll hurt like hell.
I don't care if he's in pain.
That wound'll open up again, and he'll bleed to death.
We're all hurt. You got your arm half gnawed off by that damn dog. The only one who ain't been hurt is the professor.
Just fortunate, I suppose.
Stilson has got to ride. We have to get moving. We can still catch up to the priest and get that treasure.
Preacher will likely be joined up with him by then.
Fine with me. I want another shot at that son of a bitch.
Now, I know you do, but Stilson can't ride. You and Bert and the professor can go after him, I reckon. I'll stay and take care of Chuck.
You sure about that?
Yeah, we just can't leave him alone.
Kobe pulled out his pistol. The ball struck Stilson in the middle of the forehead and exploded his skull.
Well, I reckon we can just leave him and get after Preacher and that treasure now, huh?
I reckon we can.
Horse, Nighthawk's pony, and Audie's stubby-legged mount had all had a night's rest, so they were fresh and strong. Preacher set a brisk pace that day, although he did call a halt more often than he might have otherwise, since two of the animals were carrying double and he didn't want them to get too tired. They were low on supplies, too, and everyone was hungry as the day wore on. There was no time to stop and hunt for fresh meat, though. Preacher was certain that Kobe and the others would have regrouped by now and would be coming after him. For a change, though, the odds were even. With Jimson dead and Stilson badly wounded. That left just Kobe, Arnie, Chambers, and McDermott to go after the treasure. Preacher figured that he, Audie, Nighthawk, and Esteban were a match for him. Add Juanita into the mix. She had proved that she had plenty of pluck, and Preacher knew she could be counted on. And they actually outnumbered their pursuers. There were the other two Yakis to consider, too, if Preacher and his friends could catch up to the wagons before the next fracas. Preacher knew better than to be overly optimistic, but he was starting to feel like they had a good chance of coming through this alive. That afternoon, they left the mountains behind and found themselves once again in the foothills, heading east toward the vast rolling plains. As they descended from the mountains, Preacher's keen eyes spotted the wagons miles ahead of them. So far in the distance, they were little more than dots.
All right, hold up here for a minute. Preacher got out his spyglass and trained it on the far-off vehicles. They were definitely the wagons from the Alvarez expedition. He couldn't see the drivers from this angle, but he was confident they were Pablo and Joaquin. He couldn't see Father Hortensio either, but the Padre would be there. After everything that had happened, the priest wouldn't let that treasure out of his sight. None of the others seemed to have noticed, so Preacher lowered the spyglass and pointed.
There are the wagons.
Esteban and Juanita were standing next to Nighthawk's pony. They looked up sharply at the sound of Preacher's voice and followed his pointing finger.
I see them. Are you sure they are the ones we seek, Preacher?
Certain sure. It ain't likely there'd be another pair of wagons out here right now. We're well west of the Santa Fe Trail.
Can we catch up to them before they reach the mission?
Yeah, probably. Loaded down the way they are, they ain't moving very fast.
Even if we do not catch up to them before then, we know that is where they are going, do we not?
Yeah, I reckon.
But that bunch of brigands and highwaymen will be coming on quickly, too. If they catch up while the wagons are still out in the open, they can pick off the mules, pin the wagons down, and make things very difficult for all of us.
You're damn straight. That's why we need to catch up and hurry the Padre along with those wagons as much as we can.
Wick ran until he couldn't run anymore, and then he collapsed face down on the ground. He wasn't sure where he was. He wasn't sure if he was still going in the right direction. He couldn't see the tracks left by the horses anymore. But he did hear the river, and he knew he had to follow it. He had trouble remembering exactly why he was supposed to follow the river, but he knew he had to. Juanita's face filled his thoughts, and his vision of her kept him moving. In fact, he was still thinking about her when he passed out again. He didn't even feel himself hit the ground. Arnie thought it was odd when they reached the spot where Preacher had jumped them that morning, and he didn't see any sign of Wick. The last time he had seen the giant, Wick had been lying on the ground with an arrow sticking out of his back. He had looked dead, and that was how Arnie expected to find him. But the footprints told an obvious story. Wick's feet were huge, like the rest of them, and the tracks he had left showed him heading off to the east, the same way Preacher and the others had gone.
Wick's a good boy. He's going after those bastards.
They pushed on, with Bert leading Chuck Stilson's now riderless horse.
Something on the ground way up there.
Looks like some kind of animal.
What the hell?
Kobe stared at the large, shaggy shape lying prone.
That's Wick!
Ross swung quickly out of the saddle and dropped to a knee at Wick's side. Wick's back rose and fell, so he was still alive. The arrow below his shoulder blade was broken off so that only a few inches of the shaft remained. A large bloodstain soaked his shirt around the wound. Arnie knew that he couldn't pull the arrowhead out. That would just do more damage. It would have to be cut out, and that would be a tricky job, requiring plenty of light and a good place to work and a hell of a lot of bandages and hot water, none of which he had here and now.
Is he alive?
Yeah. He's lost a lot of blood, though.
Can you wake him up and get him on the extra horse?
I'll try. Somebody give me a hand. I need to roll him onto his side.
We can't take too long with this.
Just give me a few minutes.
I'll help you.
Together, Chambers and Arnie rolled Wick onto his right side. Then Arnie took out a small silver flask and uncorked it. There wasn't much in the flask, and it was the last of his whiskey, carefully hoarded over the past couple of weeks. But Wick needed it now. Arnie pried the big man's mouth open and poured a little of the fiery liquor in. Wick's eyes shot open. He tried to roll onto his back, but Chambers was there to stop him. That would have driven the arrowhead even deeper into his body.
Arnie? Where's Colby?
He's here. Don't worry. You'll be all right, Wick, but you gotta get up and get on this horse we got for you.
I was going after the Senorita.
So were we. Come with us and we'll find her.
Oh. All right. The world sure is spinning around all funny.
Just take it slow and easy.
Not slow.
Hey, Colby. I'm sorry. I got hurt.
I forgive you. Just get up and get on Stilson's horse.
Where's old Chuck?
Dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You didn't have nothing to do with it, Wick. Now, come on, get up. You can do it. Help me, Professor.
Together, he and Chambers got Wick on his feet, helped him climb into the saddle on Stilton's horse.
Come on, goddammit, let's go!
Colby and his men set off, riding beside a long, thick clump of brush. They hadn't yet passed the brush when the air was suddenly filled with a familiar sound.
Alto, señores! Alto, por favor, or my men will fire!
It was almost sundown when Preacher and his companions rode down a hill, through a screen of trees, and out into a broad open park. On the far side of the park were the two wagons.
Come on, dog!
Preacher swung out a little to the side so that as he approached, he could see Pablo and Joaquin whipping the teams mercilessly, doing their best to get more speed out of the mules and horses pulling the vehicles.
What are we going to do?
Stop them wagons until your sister and the others catch up!
Look out!
Preacher had already seen Father Hortensio poke his head out the back of the wagon. The priest had some sort of weapon in his hand. Father Hortensio had claimed that he was a man of peace and could not resort to violent measures. Obviously, that didn't hold true when he believed he was doing the Lord's work. But the important thing was that he didn't have time to reload before Preacher caught up to him.
Get ready to take the saddle!
All right, but what?
They drew even with the rear of the wagon. Preacher vaulted out of the saddle, leaping a short distance to the wagon. He caught hold of the tailgate, and his lean muscles bunched as he pulled himself inside the vehicle. Preacher crashed into Father Hortensio. Those heavy bars with their dull sheen might look pretty, but they sure as hell didn't provide a soft place to land.
Oh.
Father Hortensio lay there, half stunned. Preacher looked through the opening in the canvas cover at the front of the wagon and saw Joaquin looking back at him over his shoulder, wide-eyed with fear and surprise. Preacher pulled a pistol from behind his belt and leveled it.
Stop the wagon! Now!
No, you cannot have the treasure! It belongs to the Holy Mother Church!
Now settle down! We ain't come to steal the treasure! You know better if you just stop and think about it!
You must not take the holy relics, and the gold will rebuild the Mission Santo Domingo and do many good works!
That's fine, but that won't happen unless you listen to me, Padre. Now look, Larson and his bunch are still behind us somewhere, and they still want to get their hands on that loot.
You cannot trade it to those men for Senorita Juanita's safety. I am sorry, but...
They don't have the Senorita anymore, goddammit! She's with us now!
That finally got through to Father Hortensio. Preacher pointed, and the priest looked across the park to where Juanita, Audie, and Nighthawk were riding quickly toward him.
A savage! And a child...
No, he may be little, but he's all man. That's Audie, and the redskin with him is called Nighthawk. They're friends of mine. They helped me get Esteban and Juanita back from Larson's bunch.
But Esteban was at the cave where the treasure was stored.
A whole heap has happened since then, Padre, and I ain't got time to explain it all. Come on out for a minute, then we'll get going again.
They couldn't afford much of a delay, but Preacher wanted to be sure Father Hortensio and the two Yaquis understood the situation. When everyone was gathered beside the wagons, Preacher spoke swiftly.
All right, listen up. I think Larson's only got 3 men left who are fit to fight. So that's 4 of them against 7 of us. 8 if you count the Señorita. We got the upper hand, but not if they catch us out in the open. That's why we got to get back to the mission as fast as we can. If we get the wagons inside what's left of the sanctuary, those old walls will give us a good cover.
You think we will have to fight those men?
I'd count on it if I was you. Kobe ain't going to give up as long as there's breath in his body. He's got to be crazy mad now, not just for the gold, but for our scalps as well. That's why we got to ford up.
But Santo Domingo is a mission, not a fort. It is a holy place. There should not be a battle fought there.
Ah, but Father, what better place for good men to struggle with evil?
True, true. Very well. We will reach the mission as swiftly as possible and make our stand there.
Now you're talking! Let's get those wagons moving! We're all on the same side again.
See, the side of the angels.
Kobe, Arnie, and the others sat rigidly in their saddles as a dozen men in white trousers, blue uniform jackets, and stiff black hats emerged from the brush carrying rifles. They were Mexican soldiers, member of the army of the dictator, General Santa Anna. Their leader was a slim young officer who carried a saber.
I am Lieutenant Fernando Escobar. We are looking for a young señor and señorita who are supposed to be in this area. Have you seen any wagons recently, señores?
Why are you looking for them?
It was reported that they might be in danger, and since they are from an old family with influence in the capital, we were sent to search for them. It was lucky my patrol was close by when the report was made by the man who owns the trading post near the pass into the Sangre de Cristos. We have been riding around here for several days, searching for Señor and Señorita Alvarez.
Arnie, you speak pretty good, Mex. Tell those soldiers there that if they come to work for me, I'll make them all rich men. Ricos.
Kobe's use of the word rich perked up some interest among the stolid-faced troops.
How dare you, Señor? These men are under my command.
Tell them, Arnie.
Arnie told them. The Mexican soldiers instantly looked interested. Kobe was a gringo, which meant he was not to be trusted, but he was promising wealth. And besides, they were hundreds of miles away from Mexico City. Santa Anna, as feared as he might be, could do nothing to him over a distance like that. Kobe could practically see those thoughts going through their heads, and he saw the greed that sparked in their eyes.
All right, listen up, everybody. Tell you fellas what. I'm gonna kill the lieutenant, and then you won't have to worry about him no more.
What?
Few of the soldiers looked surprised, but none of them seemed overly concerned about the unexpected fate of their commanding officer.
You boys work for me now. Ricos, each and every one of you.
Viva el gringo!
Viva el gringo!
Preacher's gonna have a big goddamn surprise when we show up with an army to take that treasure.
Even though the foothills were still rugged in places, the trail the wagons were following was easy enough so the Preacher decided to keep them moving even after night fell. There was enough moonlight for him to be able to recognize the place where they were supposed to cut away from the river and head straight across a stretch of relatively flat land toward the old mission. Preacher knew the chances were that Kobe and the rest of the gang of thieves would keep moving too. It was a race now to see if they could reach Santo Domingo before the killers caught up to them. Juanita had climbed into one of the wagons to get some much-needed rest, and she had persuaded Esteban to come with her. The young man had been through a lot in the past few days, and Preacher told him he needed to recuperate while he could. Nighthawk was scouting ahead, and Audie had fallen behind to keep an eye on their back trail so that he could warn them if the pursuit approached. That left Preacher to ride alongside the wagon. He was moving along easily beside the lead wagon when Father Hortensio climbed onto the driver's seat next to Pablo.
I must speak to you, Senor Preacher.
What about, Padre?
About what happened back there in the mountains when I took the treasure away from Esteban.
Yeah, I've been wondering a mite about that. How'd you get that gold out of there?
We made bags out of our clothing and dragged them with the horses. It was difficult.
I expect it was.
But that is not what I wish to discuss. I want to explain to you why I did what I did.
You don't owe me no explanations, Padre. You knew we were going to try to trade that loot for Juanita's life, and you didn't want to risk losing it.
It is not loot. These relics are holy.
Yeah, so I've heard.
And the gold belongs to the church.
You agreed that Esteban and Juanita ought to have a share of it for what they did to hell.
The Archbishop agreed. I would not have. Devotion to the church should not require a payoff, as you gringos say.
Well, maybe not. But there ain't anything wrong with being fair about things neither. That ain't really any of my business, though. I'm just here because I don't want to see a low-down polecat like that fella Kobe get what he's after. Also want to see those young'uns make it back home all right, too.
As do I. I simply want to make it clear that I offer no apologies for anything I have done. I followed my conscience. That is all.
Fine. I reckon we understand each other then. Even a heathen like me can have a conscience, you know.
Perhaps I was wrong about that.
About what?
About you being a heathen, Senor Preacher.
Oh, well, thanks. I reckon.
The party moved on through the night, stopping on the occasion to let the animals rest.
No sign of Kobe or his men yet.
I don't mean nothing. They're still back there somewhere.
Along toward morning, when the moon was low in the sky and the stars were losing their twinkle against the graying of the sky, Nighthawk rode back to the wagon and gave Preacher an emphatic nod.
You spotted the old mission? Well, now that's good news.
Preacher suddenly heard Audie's horse and knew the little man wouldn't be riding that fast unless Trouble was riding right behind him. Preacher wheeled horse around as Audie raced up out of the night's tail end.
They're back there, Preacher, and coming up fast. I thought you said there were only four or five of them.
That's all I knew about.
Well, there are more than that now. There are at least a dozen riders, probably more.
Maybe it ain't Kobe's bunch. How far back you reckon they are?
Not much more than a mile.
I wonder how far we are from the ruins.
I'd estimate about a half mile.
Preacher stared wide-eyed at Nighthawk.
I thought you couldn't talk.
Of course I can talk. I just didn't need to till now.
Well, I'll be gut. Esteban! Juanita! Padre!
As the three looked out from the covered beds of the vehicles, Preacher waved Pablo and Joaquin on.
Keep them teams moving. Get all the speed out of them you can. Those hard cases are closing in behind us, coming up in a hurry. We'll make a run for the old mission, try to get there before they can catch up to us. But I want all the guns loaded and ready, because one way or another, there's bound to be a fight. Audie and Nighthawk and me will drop back a ways and see if we can slow them down some, but don't count on that. Padre, keep them Yakis pushing the teams. Esteban, you and Juanita get ready to fight if you have to.
See, Preacher. We will be ready.
Be careful, Preacher.
Preacher and the other two men turned their horses to ride back in the direction they had come from.
No, you stay with the wagon. Come on, boys. Yeah!
Preacher, Audie, and Nighthawk tore off down the back trail of the wagon.
The Senorita is quite fond of you, my friend.
What?
I'd say she's rather smitten, in fact.
Oh, hell, Audie. I gotta wonder how someone as short as you could be so full of shit. You're crazy. She's just a kid.
On the contrary, she's a full-grown woman. I'm just saying that there was more to her admonition than a simple wish for you to be careful.
Well, it don't really matter right now. First, we gotta live through the next few hours. We pull that off, then I'll worry about Juanita.
There they are.
Preacher spotted the large group of riders coming toward him across a stretch of open ground about 500 yards wide. Audie had been right about the number. There were about a dozen and a half men in the party. Dawn light was strong enough now so the Preacher could see the white trousers and blue jackets on some of the riders.
Damn! That looks like the Mexican cavalry!
Audie took out his spyglass.
You're correct about that, but I also see the one you called Kobe and several of his companions from our earlier clash, including that gigantic fellow.
That big son of a bitch is still alive?
He's with them. There's no mistaking an individual of that size.
Way back when all this started, I told the fellow who owns the trading post to get word to Santa Fe and send the army up here to look for those youngsters. I'll bet Kobe and the others are prisoners.
Hell, fire, they're shooting at us!
It looks more like Kobe is in command.
God damn it!
Preacher lifted his rifle and cocked.
All right.
We'll let them get a little closer, then give them a volley. They ain't even in range yet, but if they want to waste powder and shot, that's fine with me.
Audie and Nighthawk got their rifles ready to fire, too. And the three men waited patiently as their enemies galloped closer and closer.
Well, shit, I reckon that'll do.
Preacher drew his bead on the leader.
I got Kobe.
Preacher took a deep breath and stroked the trigger. When the gray cloud cleared, Preacher saw the two saddles had been emptied. Unfortunately, neither of them belonged to Kobe. Two of the Mexican soldiers were down. Either Preacher's shot had missed entirely, or the ball had gone past Kobe and struck one of the soldiers. Didn't really matter. Preacher was glad to have inflicted some damage on the enemy, but he was disappointed as hell that Kobe was still drawing breath.
Let's go!
Preacher wheeled horse around. Audie and Nighthawk turned their mounts as well, and the three men galloped after the wagons, reloading as they rode. When they were ready, Preacher reined in and turned horse again. Another Mexican soldier hit the dirt. A second one reeled in the saddle and clutched the wounded shoulder, but he didn't fall.
It's me, I'm afraid. With its shorter barrel, this rifle of mine doesn't have quite the carrying power it needs for this fight.
Don't worry about that. I reckon the range will be closer later.
Undoubtedly correct. Well, we've accounted for three of them at least.
Yeah, and they're slowing down. Kobe may have got those Mex troops to work with him somehow, but right about now they gotta be wondering if they made a mistake. Yeah, you're right, Nighthawk. Let's get the hell out of here.
As they came in sight of the old tumble-down walls, they saw the wagons rolling into the shelter of the ruined sanctuary. Minutes later, they entered the ruins themselves. The preacher noted with approval that the Yaquis had pulled the wagons behind the wall that had most of it remaining. It was high enough to completely shield the vehicle. Preacher, Audie, and Nighthawk dismounted and led their horses into a corner where they'd be protected from two directions. Then Preacher went quickly over to the wagons and found Esteban, Juanita, and Father Hortensio waiting for him.
Good job getting here fast like you did. We got a chance now.
See, but how much of one?
Well, we're outnumbered again, but we got the fort. They have to bring the fight to us on our ground.
On the Lord's ground.
Yeah, but it's liable to be a dark and bloody ground before the sun gets much higher in the sky. Where are they now?
Look, one of them is coming.
Only one?
Yes, and he's under a flag of truce. I assume you intend to honor it.
I reckon, Audie. Although there's a part of me wants to blow that son of a bitch out of the saddle. That's Professor Chambers, the fellow who roped Kobe and his bunch into this business in the first place.
I see. The scholar. I'd probably enjoy a conversation with him under different circumstances.
Chambers was about 50 feet from the ruins now.
That's far enough, Professor. What do you want?
Just a few minutes of your time, Preacher. Could you step out where I can see you better?
Nope.
Well, I can't say as I blame you, my friend.
I ain't your friend. Now speak your piece.
Very well. Kobe thinks that I'm here to negotiate with you. That I'll promise you something like freedom for you and your companions if you'll give us the treasure. Or some such patently false proposal.
You're saying Kobe don't intend to let us go no matter what we do?
Exactly. Nor does he intend to let me live. So I'm not negotiating, Preacher. I'm asking if you'll allow me to come in and join you.
The others had come over to the wall to listen to the conversation between Preacher and Chambers.
No!
Juanita laid a hand on her brother's arm.
Perhaps we should consider it, Esteban. He would be one more to fight on our side.
I don't blame you for not trusting me. But you can ask the señorita. When she was a prisoner, she and I had begun to work out the details of an agreement. I was going to turn on Kobe and the others and help her. Ask her if that's not the case.
Es verdad. The professor did promise to help me.
Well, you never got a chance to see whether he'd have gone through with it. But I reckon it's true enough. Kobe plans to double-cross him, and Chambers is smart enough to know that. And he'd be one more gun on our side, all right.
It's up to you, Preacher.
You realize that even if you join us, Professor, we'll still be outnumbered by 2-1.
I know. But if I stay with Kobe, my chances of surviving the day are nil. At least with you, I'd have a slim chance of living through this.
All right, Professor, come on in. You best be quick about it, though. Once Kobe realizes you betrayed him, he's liable to try to shoot you out of the saddle.
Yes, I know. Here I come.
Chambers jammed his heels into his horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging forward. At the same time, he leaned far forward over the horse's neck, making himself as small a target as possible. Rifle balls kicked up dirt around the hood of Chambers' horse as the professor hauled back on the reins and sent his mount soaring up and over the remains of the wall. The horse landed clean. Chambers pulled him into a tight turn and carried both behind the shelter of the higher portion of the wall. Preacher and Audie had been peering around the edge of that part, and they pulled back as rifle balls began to smack into the thick stone wall.
Well, I reckon Kobe's figured out you ain't on his side no more, Professor.
No doubt. All I can say is that I'm glad to be here.
Nighthawk's right, Preacher. Here they come.
Pick your spots and pick your shots.
Everyone ran to positions they had picked out along the wall, even Father Hortensio. Preacher was a little surprised to see that the priest was going to join the fight, but he remembered how Father Hortensio had blazed away at him with that blunderbuss earlier. Clearly, the Padre had decided that he was willing to fight for his faith, and that it was all right with God for him to do so. Kobe and his men made an all-out charge, galloping straight at the old mission.
Hold your fire! Let him get closer! Little bit closer! Let him have it!
Storm of lead scythed into the onrushing attack and swept several of them out of their saddles. Four or five of the Mexican soldiers went down, and so did a couple of their horses in a tangle of thrashing legs and hooves. Bert McDermott flipped backward off his horse, flinging his arms out to the side, blood spurted from his chest. Kobe and Arnie were still coming, along with five of the soldiers. Whipped was far behind him, slumped over his mount's neck, trying to keep up. With Kobe in the lead, the remaining attackers reached the wall and leaped their mounts over it. And with a mad swirl of dust and hooves that made a mockery of what should have been a peaceful early morning, they were among the defenders and the battle was suddenly hand to hand. Preacher dropped his empty rifle and yanked two pistols from behind his belt. He fired the left-hand gun at one of the soldiers. The preacher drew a bead on Kobe with the right-hand gun, but a now riderless horse suddenly slammed his shoulder as it raced past.
Damn!
The balls missed and went harmlessly into the air. Kobe's pistol spurted flame, and Joaquin went down. Pablo lunged at Arnie, reaching up to try to pull him from the saddle, but the fat man planted a foot in the Yaki's chest and kicked him back. Pablo stumbled and fell. Arnie rode right over him, a steel-shod hoof landing in the middle of his face and shattering his skull. Esteban reversed his rifle and clubbed one of the soldiers off his horse. As the soldier hit the ground, Esteban leapt on it and drove the shattered stock into his face again and again. A few yards away, one of the soldiers leaned over and grabbed Juanita, jerking her feet off the ground. With a leer on his face, he tried to lift her to his horse's back in front of his saddle, but he stiffened suddenly as an arrow erupted from his throat. He went limp and let go of Juanita. Another soldier raced his mount after Audie, who scampered toward a pile of rocks with grass growing up between them. The Mexican slashed at the little man's head with the saber that had belonged to the patrol's lieutenant. Audie ducked under the swipe, stopped short, and reached up to grab the man's arm. With a heave of broad, muscular shoulders, Audie pulled the man from the saddle and used his own momentum to flip him into the rocks. The lone surviving soldier wheeled his horse toward Esteban and Juanita. Before he could reach him, however, Chambers leaped up in front of him, his pocket pistol in hand. The soldier jerked a little, but the professor's shot had only grazed his arm. The soldier had plenty of strength left to thrust out the rifle in his hand. The bayonet attached to the end of the barrel drove deeply into Chambers' chest. Chambers staggered back, pawing at the blade that was still buried in his body. His eyes opened wide in horror and the realization that he was dying. He fell to his knees and then slumped forward. The butt of the rifle struck the ground and held him propped up that way, almost as if he were praying. The soldier kept going, aiming his horse directly at Esteban and Juanita, who were now huddled together. In another moment, he would have trampled him. But suddenly, another rider was beside him, a huge arm lashing out in a smash and blow. At the same instant, Wick's horse rammed into the soldier's horse. The two men and their mounts went down in a welter of dust. Wick was the only one who came out of that dust, dragging a broken leg behind him. He hobbled toward Juanita.
Señorita!
Get out of the way!
Kobe, stop! Kobe!
On the other side of the ruined sanctuary, Arnie left his saddle in a dive and tackled and slammed into Preacher. Preacher rolled and came to his feet first, knife in hand. But Arnie was up only an instant later, also brandishing steel. The two men came together in a blur of thrust and parry and counter thrust. Both men knew they were just about evenly matched. And the first slip, the first mistake, would likely decide this deadly match. That slip was Preacher's, as a rock turned under his foot and threw him off balance for an instant. In that shaving of time, Arnie's blade licked out, aiming true for Preacher's throat. It took every bit of speed and instinct Preacher possessed to pull his head to the side just in time, so that Arnie's knife just ripped an ugly gash in the side of Preacher's neck. But the missed thrust brought Arnie in too close to protect himself from Preacher's counter thrust. Preacher slammed his knife into Arnie's chest, the keen blade slicing deeper and deeper until it was buried all the way right up to the Green River stamped on the hilt.
God damn it.
Preacher turned and saw Kobe standing in front of Esteban and Juanita, both hands filled with pistols. The only thing between him and the two young people was Father Hortensio, who stood there unarmed.
In the name of God, I call on you to lay down your arms, henchmen of Satan.
God left this place a long time ago, old man. Now there's just me, and I got one pistol for you, one for the kid, and then it'll be just me and the señorita.
Kobe's left-hand pistol came up toward Father Hortensio. Preacher drew back his knife hand. But before he could let fly with the blade, a ham-like hand rose from behind Kobe and grabbed the back of his shirt. The giant closed his other hand around Kobe's throat and slammed him on the ground. Pale and bleeding heavily, Wick loomed over his former friend. Both hands were around Kobe's neck now, squeezing for all they were worth. Kobe jabbed both pistols into Wick's midsection. Wick's back arched under the impact of the shot, but he didn't let go. His hands remained locked around Kobe's neck. Everyone heard the sharp report as Wick snapped Kobe's neck. Then the muscles in Wick's arms and shoulders bunched one last time, and he tore Kobe's head right off his shoulder. As Wick slumped forward over his former friend's body, the grisly trophy slipped from his fingers and rolled to the side so that Kobe's eyes stared sightlessly toward the wagons and the lost treasure of Mission Santo Domingo, now home again at last.
Well, Padre, I reckon you got a good start on something every church has got to have. A graveyard.
Unfortunately, you are right about that, my son.
Along with Audi and Nighthawk, the two men stood beside the last of the numerous graves they had dug and then refilled over the course of the long day. It was nearly sunset, and it had taken that long to lay to rest everyone who had died in the early morning battle. Preacher wouldn't have minded just throwing Kobe's body in a ravine somewhere. That was more than the bastard deserved as far as Preacher was concerned. But Father Hortensio had insisted that everyone be properly buried, even their enemies. Somehow, Wick Jimson didn't fall into that category anymore. Preacher hoped that somebody would put up a marker for the big man. He had a feeling Juanita would see to that.
What are you going to do now, Padre?
My task is to rebuild the mission and bring the word of God to this land once again. With Esteban and Juanita to help me, and with the Lord's blessing, I am sure I will succeed.
They've forgiven you for what happened up in the mountains?
Yes. God has filled them with his mercy and understanding.
Yeah. I ain't quite so forgiven.
Then, it is fortunate for me that I do not require your forgiveness, is it not?
I swear, goddamn, Padre.
Preacher started to turn away, but he paused and looked again at the grave where Professor Rufus Chambers was buried. He supposed Chambers had redeemed himself, too, there at the end, at least a little. Preacher couldn't bring himself to feel any real regret for the man's death, though. It was Chambers' greed that had started all the trouble in motion. But in the end, he had come up empty, just like Kobe and Arnie and the others. Preacher suspected that under different circumstances, Arnie wouldn't have been such a bad fella. They might have even been friends. As it was, though, all Preacher could do was feel a grudging respect for the man. The four of them walked back slowly toward the mission as the sun lowered toward the peaks in the west.
What are your plans, Preacher?
Well, Audie, I might mosey on back up to the Rockies and go after a good mess of peltries, I reckon. You and Nighthawk heading that way, too?
No. I believe we've decided to stay here for a while and help see to it that Father Hortensio gets his mission rebuilt. Then I'd like to see Santa Fe before we head north again.
Horse was already saddled and ready to go. Dog sat waiting beside the big stallion. There was some light left in the day, and Preacher wanted to use it.
Well, reckon this is so long, then.
You're leaving already? Esteban and Juanita will be disappointed.
Well, why don't you say my goodbyes for me? I never was much for things like that. I'd rather ride on without a fuss.
I suppose we can honor your wishes.
Preacher turned to Nighthawk and shook hands with the Crow warrior.
I got a feeling we'll be running into each other again somewheres down the trail.
Preacher started toward Horse.
Wait!
Sorry, Padre. I figured you wouldn't want to shake hands with a heathen.
Even a priest makes mistakes from time to time.
Father Hortensio stuck out his hand.
Though I still find your name somewhat improper, you are no heathen, my son.
With his other hand, he brought a small pouch from somewhere inside his robes.
I want you to have this, too.
Preacher clasped the priest's hand and then took the pouch, frowning at the little clinking sounds its contents made.
Some of the lost treasure?
No longer lost, thanks to you. Take it, with the church's gratitude, and with mine.
Well, I wouldn't want to insult the church's generosity.
Preacher slipped the bag of coins inside his buckskins.
Or yours, Padre.
Preacher turned horse and rode north, dog trotting alongside. Looking back, Preacher lifted a hand in farewell.
Vaya con Dios, amigo!
Preacher smiled and rode on, heeling horse into a ground-eaten lope. By the time night fell, he would be miles to the north, well on the way to somewhere else. But Preacher was content in the knowledge that, despite what he left behind, he had a fortune of his own in this wild, beautiful country that would forever be his home. The First Mountain Man 12, Preacher's Fortune, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Eric Mesner, Christopher Graybill, Colleen Delaney, Andy Clements, Stephen Carpenter, James Lewis, and Michael John Casey. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher's Fortune, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagle series. Available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
You smell it too, old fella? Snow. Winter's coming on. Be here before you know it. But it's time for it, I reckon.
With serious weather on the way, the legendary mountain man Preacher is ready to head home to his cabin in the Shining Mountains. But for a band of usually peaceful Arikara Indians, pilgrim hunting season is just beginning.
Good fight, fella.
Stand right there, mister. Don't move or I'll shoot.
You better point that damn thing at the ground, friend. In case you didn't notice, I just risked my own scalp to keep these Indians from taking yours. We're on the same side.
You're one of those wild mountain men. How do we know you won't try to kill us?
Against his better judgment, Preacher agrees to a rescue effort that forces him to travel hundreds of miles in the dead of winter. The wagon train he guides carries one very pregnant woman and a pass of dark secrets. And with the engine still on their trail, nerves fray and tempers flare.
My wife talks about you all the time.
What?
She's very impressed by you, Preacher. She thinks you're quite a man.
Well, I'm sure Miss Galloway's a fine woman.
And a fine-looking woman, too, don't you think?
I ain't paid that much attention.
Oh, surely you have. You're a man, after all. You couldn't help but notice an attractive woman.
I don't go around looking at other fellas' wives.
Well, she looks at you. A great deal, in fact.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
No. And you wouldn't even think about stealing a kiss from her, would you?
Look, goddammit, if you got something you want to say, mister, you best go ahead and just spit it out.
All right, I will. Stay away from my wife. Stop talking to her, and if you lay one hand on her, I swear I'll kill you.
You ought to be more careful who you go around threatening to kill. Folks tend to take that serious out here.
Before they reach their destination and the last of the snow melts, the pilgrims will battle the natural elements, and they'll plumb the depths of savagery necessary to survive against man's worst enemy, his own nature. Don't miss the epic adventure awaiting you in The Last Mountain Man 11, Preacher's Journey. Available soon from Graphic Audio, where the legend of the American West comes alive.
Concentrate. Concentrate. And visualize a storm.
Graphic Audio presents...
What? What is this storm?
DC Comics.
This is a code A emergency. Do you copy?
Justice League of America. Superman. The never-ending battle.
There is power that not even they can overcome.
Where is he?
I have my own reserves, fool!
Hello, Superman. If you can still hear this, you are in the final moments of your life.
Copyright 2008 DC Comics. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.